voices. Unedited, uncut, unfiltered, unflappable. Bringing you glory to the green. Representing One Nation. Mean Green Nation. It's time for the Mean Green Nation podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for gathering here again to discuss the Mean Green athletics, some Mean Green sports. This is the Mean Green Nation podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to it. I am your host, Adam, here as always with my co-host, Greg. And we're going to cover basically everything that happened this week, all the good stuff that happened. Soccer won. We beat UTSA. It's a good week. And we're gonna play one of the best teams in the conference. So we got a lot to talk about. I think, like, right now, I'm just going to plug my other show since we are recording that tonight. And it's not live, but if you like what we're doing here and you want something decidedly less sportsy just to kind of mix in, please do listen to my other show, Deranged Penguin. That's Penguin spelled with a W instead of a U. And that's the end of that. My little plug there. I know something you might see on the bio. It says, like, Josephine Street. It says Joe Street Podcast is, like, the live thing. It's because I try to keep them all under, like, a network, like a kind of a unified thing. That way it's easy to find all the podcasts that we do. There used to be a soccer one. There used to be, like, a tech and kind of a style one. It's mostly a tech one. But I got real busy, so it's mostly just this and Deranged Penguin. So try those out. So yeah, tonight, what are we talking about? Well, we're going to recap the UTSA game, go over the good things against, you know, I mean, we beat a rival. We're going to preview the La Tech game. We're going to ask about Mike Canales and the case for keeping him. And Greg's going to regale us with some news on the coaching search front. And then finally, we asked you guys to provide us with some Twitter questions, and you did. And we thank you, and we will answer those Twitter questions. So with that said, Greg, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, doing real well, you know. Lots of positive vibes are coming in. Like you said, soccer team won, football team won. Coaching search is heating up, you know. Lots of positive things out there. Hopefully we can keep it rolling into this week against Louisiana Tech. We'll need all the positive things we can take going into this game.
Good vibes. So thanks. I see we already have listeners. Hey, listeners, if you want to interact with us live, that probably means the easiest way to do it would be to tweet at us. I am Mean Green Nation on Twitter. Greg is MGN_breakdown. But there's like a chat function within this Mixler live streaming thing. But if you want to, like, you know, be really delayed, you can email us. That's weird, but you can. I'll get those. I'll respond to those. But let's jump right into it. So we beat UTSA, and I was saying that it's UTSA Hate Week. Hashtag UTSA Hate Week. You know, because we need a rival, and I think Mike Canales ended the game, like, in his post-game recap, saying, now it's a rivalry. Now it's a rivalry. Whether or not you think it is, it was our most winnable game. I think, Greg, going into the game last week on a podcast, you said, if we're going to only win one game, let it be this one. And so mm-hmm. It came to pass. Yeah.
It did.
Yeah, it was the interesting thing, all three games in the series, and there have only been three, have come down to the final drive for the losing team. In 2013, Derek Thompson led the team down by 8, completed a few passes here, there, and everywhere, and got to the one-yard line. There was a weird untimed down, and threw an interception at the one-yard line. The completion, were it to happen, would have put the team down 2. They would have needed a 2-point conversion to tie it. And then last season at the Alamo Dome, UNT got a huge stop, forced a punt, and it was strange because UTSA was like fumbling punts all day and messing up, and we were like killing on special teams. And Zach Whitfield, like, try to scoop up the ball and return it when he shouldn't have. He was trying to make a play. I don't really blame him for it. And he fumbled the ball. UTSA got it and basically ended the game. This season, North Texas needed to stop UTSA twice down the stretch. And they did, which is saying something considering that this defense has had some struggles this season, allowing 60 points twice. But they got both stops and won the game. So hand clap, applause all around, ladies and gentlemen, for the defense. I had lots of thoughts on the game. Mike Canales instructed his team, celebrated like it was a Super Bowl, like they won a conference championship, because it felt so good for a lot of reasons. And we'll get into those in a second. But what were your thoughts on the game overall?
Overall, it was about what I thought what would happen. You know, I didn't think, you know, UTSA fans and the people that cover them were pumping them up all week that they would be able to stop our rushing attack, that their run defense was really good. And even though our run offense looked good on paper, that, you know, it wasn't going to be anything that they couldn't stop. And they couldn't stop it all night long. And give credit to Coach Canales for continuously going to inverted veer with DeMarcus Smith and then hitting him on the running plays with Jeffrey Wilson, putting the ball in your best player's hands. You know, we've talked about it over and over again on this podcast. You know, let your playmakers make plays. Jeffrey Wilson, your best playmaker, he made plays. The defense, you know, they gave up a lot of yards in between, you know, basically 20 to the 40. But for the most part, they held them. You know, they held them. They didn't give up a lot of, you know, the points. You know, typically when you see somebody put up that many yards, you would say, hey, they scored a lot of points, but they didn't. So I was glad. I was happy the way our defense, you know, made plays. When we blocked the extra point and ran that for two, I was like, there's no way. There is no way in hell we are losing this game.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of things that were weird about this game. I was like weird. I don't even say weirdly, but like my heart was kind of beating. Like I was nervous watching the whole game, and usually I'm not really like that unless it's like a really important game. You know, like I think the last time I can remember being like that was like the bowl game. Like we could maybe lose this. Like we got to win this game, or you know what I mean? Like, and you know, it felt really good to get that win for two reasons. One, because it was UTSA, and you know, you can go back and listen to a couple other podcasts and other things I've written to kind of figure out why that was. I think there's their arrival. I felt really bad after they beat us a couple seasons in a row. Like you said, some of their fans on the Twitter machine are a little insufferable. And so it's good to kind of get one up on them. And I did some trolling. I totally, you know, I smiled at every complaint about their coaching staff that they tweeted out, like, oh, this team sucks. And it was great. I was reveling in all of that. But the second thing is to not be winless. And it might seem like a stupid goal, like, oh, God, come on, guys. You're celebrating a win. Act like you've been there before. I mean, we hadn't been there before. This whole season, we hadn't been there before. And it felt really good. And, like, two things, like, came out of that. One, it feels good to win. Wow, does it feel good to win again? And you can see how fun it is for, like, the players. And Mike Canales has talked about this in a couple of his press conferences. And we'll get to that a little bit later, like, the things he said in them. But I want to kind of jump on what you said, that everybody played well. Offense, defense, special teams, all played well. Not, you know, national championship caliber level. But for this team, they played better than they have all season. I mean, maybe yards. Like in the Rice game, I think they put up more yards in the Rice game. Our numbers weren't that, but we looked like we had an identity and on offense, and that's a big deal. Like we put up more yards in the Rice game, but it looked like that was kind of by accident. We got a 93-yard touchdown pass, but it's not like we were a throwing team. You know, that was kind of like, well, look, what do we have here? A 93-yard TD.
Right.
This game, we, you know, like you said, I've said before, I want to see Jeffrey Wilson handoffs. I want to see DeMarcus Smith keepers off play action or like reads, and I want to see play action passes. And we're doing those, and that felt really great. It was great to see that. So I felt like it was a great offensive game because of that. Mm-hmm. We were becoming the team that we should be. And defensively, get to the quarterback. making plays. You know, special teams, obviously, like you said, blocking the extra point, taking it all the way. That was a little bit, I don't want to draw parallels to some of the greatest times in North Texas history, but I might, just because Mike Canales said he's going to remember this win forever or whatever. But yeah, like, this had shades of some of those great plays that we've seen in the last 5-6 years, Antoine Jimerson screen against ULL, that Three Stooges interception, I guess. I don't want to call it Three Stooges, but that incredible interception that, was it Marcus Trice had off of, like, the Zach Orr tip and this, that, and the other. Like, those plays that stick out in your mind, this kind of had a little bit of that. That was a turning point. We blocked an extra point and take it all the way. It's like we stole all the momentum back after UTSA had such a great drive. But let's go a little bit deeper. The offense. I already said that I liked the way we ran the ball. Jeffrey Wilson... we definitely ran the ball well with DeMarcus Smith. Passing game, only 104 yards. What are your thoughts on the offense specifically?
The next step that we have to see the offense take is to be able to take those play action passes and complete the deep ball. We were nowhere close to stretching the field. If we can stretch the field vertically, like we're going to have to do against a Louisiana Tech team that has a great run defense. If we're able to do that, you know, we have a chance. But that's the next step I want to see the offense really take. We, you know, DeMarcus Smith, he's a dynamic athlete. We see that. We see he's great with his legs. We can see he can extend the play. You know, he can make the plays that Andrew McNulty couldn't make. But now he has to raise his level of, you know, his accuracy, completing passes. And they did some good job of getting some wide receivers open and giving him easy passes. And for the most part, they really didn't have to throw the ball to beat UTSA. They kind of just had to, you know, complete a few passes here and there. So I'd like to see the passing game, obviously, it has to get better. The running game is getting to where we hoped it would be at the beginning of the year. We're seeing the offensive line open up holes, you know, for Jeffrey Wilson. We're seeing the fact that DeMarcus Smith is a weapon and defenses have to respect him as a weapon. And that's also opening up running lanes for Jeffrey Wilson, because you can't focus on both of them. You got to take away one or the other. So we're starting to see things come together. The next step, like I keep saying, is the deep ball. Can we find a deep ball threat? We have Carlos Harris, you know, as a possession guy underneath, do some things, you know, but we need to find the deep threat.
Yeah, and some of that is, I mean, let's be a little bit critical here. Some of that is DeMarcus Smith, and a lot of people have commented on this for various reasons. You know, either they just don't like DeMarcus Smith or something like that, but like you said, he obviously is a better – he's playing better at the quarterback position. We're getting better production from the position than we were previously. And that's not to say that we're getting better quarterback stats from it, because, yeah, 104 yards, 50% completion. I mean, you know, that's not a whole lot. The thing is that although Andrew McNulty made some plays here and there with his feet, DeMarcus Smith gives you home run plays, and he has. I think I saw somebody on the message board. That's the other thing. We're like, what are we talking about here? We're getting a lot of stuff from the message board, Vito's blog, conversations on Twitter, conversations I've had in DMs, just, you know, people conversations. You get all this stuff. I think somebody said, yeah, we're not getting home runs here. Like, where are the home runs? Like, well, DeMarcus Smith, you know, 60 yards to Carlos Harris against Southern Miss. The 40-yard bomb to Kidzie against Western Kentucky. And in this game, a 50-yard run, right? Before that, he had like a 20, 30-yard run. Those are the kind of plays, and they talked about it on the broadcast, the chunk yards, you know, like the big plays. I mean, you can't – it's really hard to do a 12-play, 90-yard drive every time down the field. You need big chunks of yardage. And he gives you that. Maybe not through the air like you'd hope. I mean, he's a quarterback. You'd hope he can chuck it down the field and get a 30-yard pass. But right now, he at least gets you those yards, even if it's with his feet. So I like that. As you said, one game, we've eclipsed 200 yards in each of the games he's played in. Yeah, and other people, their concern was, hey, They're going to load up on the run. What happens when they load up on a run? La Tech is going to try to load up on the run. They're one of the best run defenses in the best run defense, like yardage wise, in the conference. I don't think they can, because you can't. It's not like we're turning the ball around, turn around, handing the ball off, and running ISOs up the middle. You know, we're doing zone stuff. UTSA was trying to focus on Jeffrey Wilson, and DeMarcus Smith pulls, takes it up the gut. It's basically doing that bootleg. I know I'm kind of talking down to you if you understand all this, but if you don't, and you're just kind of like listening, you know, that old style, like John Elway, you hand it off to, or you fake the handoff to Terrell Davis going left, and then he bootlegs right, and all of a sudden he has like 10 yards in front of him, or he could throw a 10-yard pass to Ed McCaffrey or something like that. That's the kind of stuff that keeps you honest. It's the same concept, except instead of turning your back to the defense, you're reading the defense. And that's all a zone read is. And there's not a whole lot of zone read going on now. There's a lot of other read stuff, but I won't bore you with that. So I agree with that. Did you happen to hear Mike Canales talk about his philosophy? And notice some of this on the message board. Some people noticed this, that other guys haven't been getting the ball. Like Willie Ivey hasn't got a lot of runs, and definitely not Antoine Jimerson. Canales said after the game that he finds a workhorse and he gives him the ball, like Lance Dunbar. Did you notice that?
I didn't hear it, but it makes sense. I mean, does anybody else really demand the ball right now? I mean, for a 1-7 team, does anybody besides Jeffrey Wilson and DeMarcus Smith and, you know, Carlos Harris, does anybody else really, you know, scream to you that they deserve touches? We want to see T. Gorey get touches because we think he can be explosive. We want to see Willie Ivory get touches because we know he has potential, but that's all it is potential. These guys, Jeffrey Wilson, DeMarcus Smith, Carlos Harris, they're producing on the field. And Mike Canales is like, I see it, and I'm going to give those guys the ball. I'm going to find ways to get my best players the ball. So, I mean, I can see, you know, that theory, but I think in today's world of college football, the more you spread it out and the more weapons you have, the better your offense will be.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like a novel concept or like some breakthrough thing. He's giving it to his best players. Right now, I think I said Jeffrey Wilson is the best player on the team, followed by DeMarcus Smith, and then Carlos Harris. Not like in pure talent, but you know, you can turn around and hand the ball off to Jeffrey Wilson without like risking a turnover. DeMarcus Smith gets the ball snapped to him, and he can make a play. Carlos Harris might be a great even better weapon if he had better throwing, more consistent, more accurate quarterback back there. It makes sense. When your best player is, the running back, give it to the running back. And, you know, he's also the future. He runs like Adrian Peterson out there, like a skinnier Adrian Peterson. The other thing that he did that I liked from the offense was some of the trick plays. Well, mostly the one trick play, the fumble Ruski thing. He got the ball in the end zone. I liked that. Have you any thoughts on that? Is that?
I liked the play. It was a great setup. And I thought that, and I told my dad this and some of the people sitting around me, you know, we kept running that counter, the tray that you had shown the gifts of, and you did that little post. And we kept running Jeffrey Wilson to one side. And the defense was flowing that way. And I just kept thinking, I was like, man, we're really setting him up for a reverse, you know, some type of reverse where you flip it to Carlos Harris going back the other way. That was the next trick play that I wanted to see. And, you know, kind of jumping ahead to Louisiana Tech, they're a very aggressive defense. They fly to the ball. And that's a play that I think we might see this week. We might see some type of reverse to slow down their rush because they come downhill so fast. So, you know, getting back to the trick play that we ran down at the goal line, it was well executed, well designed, and it was fun. It was fun. It was college football. You know, that those are the things that you like to see a team pull off that's struggling like we have. It was kind of just one of those things where you're just like, let's just throw it all out there. We got nothing to lose. And, you know, so it was fun to watch.
Yeah, that's the thing that you had said before. Like, I think you were like, during Canales' first game, you were like, I want to see him go out there and over-celebrate and, you know, get a penalty or knock somebody in the ass. Like, really get people excited. And although he hasn't quite done that, they have kind of, you know, taken, you know, like the thought that you had and applied it. They have fun plays. They're kind of making it simple. He said as much. Let's make it fun. Let's go out there and have fun. And, you know, that will be its own motivation. But, yeah, like I said, we're kind of jumping ahead a little bit. I want to talk about the defense. I expected them to do better. I thought that they could sack their quarterback, and they got 3 sacks against him. They chased him around. They chased UTSA's Dalton Stern is what I'm talking about. I forget the guy. I didn't write it down. The 3 people that had a sack, but we chased him around a lot. We forced him into some bad throws. That said, UTSA did have 400 yards of offense. I think Larry Coker, in his postgame thoughts, thought that their offense did well. So, as much as I want to praise the defense, and they played well, Nate Brooks played well. He made a drive-saving open field tackle that nobody will remember, but it was like 3rd and 12. Their kid Thomas caught a drag route, and he was getting ready to turn upfield, and he had a couple steps on Nate Brooks, and Brooks dived, made an ankle tackle that stopped him for a 7-yard gain. And Zach Whitfield, the next play, you know, got a pass breakup that ended the drive on 4th down. That's the kind of thing that you're like, oh, great job, Zach Whitfield, but you got to point to that previous play, Nate Brooks making that amazing open field tackle that I always praise Kenny Byers for. Otherwise, that didn't happen. It was a little hidden play, right? A lot of guys play well. A lot of guys made some really nice plays. However, UTSA drove really easily through our defense at times, including the one to make it 23-21 briefly. They kind of walked down the field, completed passes here, there, and everywhere. They kind of spread us out, and then they went heavy for the last 2 or 3 runs and just kind of ran it up the middle, and that's without their starting running back that we kind of hyped up a little bit. Was it Jarvion Williams? We caught a break there. What are your thoughts on the defense? Like I said, I give them – they played well. They won the game, essentially. Got four straight – was it 4 down stops? I think they forced a punt. So 7 straight plays. Stop UTSA. But they didn't do so well, like, yardage-wise, and allowed some points. What are your thoughts?
I think – and I'm going to borrow – you know, Will Muschamp is a good defensive coordinator, although it doesn't seem like it right now. But he's put together good defenses in his time. And he has always alluded to the point saying that in today's game, it's more about, you know, you could give up 500 yards, but if you can, you know, force the team to only – if you only give up, like, 20 points a game, well, then you've accomplished your feat. So we gave up a lot of yards. We bent, but we didn't really. Once they got into our territory, they kind of, you know, shut themselves down. You know, they had penalties. Our defense kind of stepped up. So, you know, we were kind of bend but don't break, but we really didn't bend far. Yeah, UTSA was getting, you know, that they would always normally, it seemed like they'd get a first down right away. You know, they'd get 1 or 2 first downs, and then our defense would kind of stiffen up. And so I was fine with that. Even though they had 475 or whatever they had yards, it didn't seem like they had that much. And to be honest with you, the referees helped them out a bunch because there were so many holding penalties that they missed. I mean, they were just like hugging guys. They were hugging guys out there, and you're like, are you going to call that, or what are you going to do? Are you watching? What? I mean, it was like when you're in a position like we are and you're struggling as much as we were going in the game, it seems like you have to battle everything to win your first game. Like, it is so difficult. You're like, we're battling the reps. We're battling, you know, the fact that we're not playing well. It just, you know, I knew it wasn't going to be easy to pull off a win, but, you know, that was just a little ridiculous. But
getting yeah, back I'm to laughing defense, at that. There was a couple times that I was like, that was clearly a hold, you know? I totally agree with everything you said there. I just want to say that.
And the intentional grounding. Excuse me. I mean, you know, Tommy Perry's like, you know, 10 yards onto the field screaming at the referee that he was in the middle of the field. He was in the middle of the field. I guess they were saying that he left the pocket and he was outside the pocket, but then he came back and he was inside the pocket. So does it negate itself? I don't know the rule there, but he was clearly in the middle of the field. The ball didn't get back to the line of scrimmage and there was nobody there.
So like I was watching the broadcast and if he went outside the pocket, he did so by like inches. Another thing about that drive. So, you know, I agree with you there. Another thing about that drive is that Keyshawn McClain defended their like maybe NFL tight end Dan Morgan on like a, you know, a little fade route to the corner there, and that was huge because the next play, you know, Dalton Stern basically showed why he's a walk-on quarterback and just overthrew it like by 50 feet. It was not even a chance, but it was Nate Brooks guarding him. But the one that was actually catchable that he Morgan kind of sort of caught was an excellent defensive play by Keyshawn McClain. So he's not just making tackles. He's out there making coverage plays. So I wanted to highlight that because you reminded me of it. It was on that same drive. I think that those are good points about the bend but don't break kind of defense. I mean, you look at the stats, it's kind of the problem with looking at stats all the time. But, yeah, they had 475 yards, and it seemed like they kind of walked down the field a little, you know, easily. But, yeah, like you said, when it came down to it, when we needed to stop them, we stopped them, and we did it twice in a row. And that's huge. Without our best tackler, because Keyshawn McClain got sent off with a very, very questionable targeting call. And that wasn't the worst one I saw that day. I think I had the game before it was Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, where they basically played basketball out there. There was a very questionable targeting penalty there where the guy just basically, you know, tackled a guy and they're like, well, you looked at his face, so that's a targeting. So it wasn't the worst one I saw that day, but it was pretty bad. Defense is making improvements. They're not the 2013 team, but I think most importantly for this season is that they're not the team that got gashed by Portland State. UTSA is one of the worst teams in football, and they were able to move it easily, but we shut them down. That's kind of mostly what I wanted to get to highlight there. Like I said, a lot of guys made great plays. I think Chad Pohl got a sack. Pretty much everybody in the secondary made some very clutch tackles. I highlighted Keyshawn McClain. I highlighted Nate Brooks. Chad Davis obviously made plays out there making tackles, but then he also got that scoop and score that was huge. Huge scoop and score, turning point. Yeah. But Austin Orr blocked the kick. That's kind of more important than the scoop and score, really. Like, it doesn't matter, but if nobody blocks the kick, if you're ready to scoop. Anybody else stand out for you defensively?
No, you know, I just thought it was, you know, like you said, we're showing improvement. Secondary showing some improvement. UTSA's offensive line, they were terrible, so it's hard to gauge what our defensive line was able to do. We'll see this week how much improvement they continue to show. But, you know, I was happy that, you know, we held somebody under 30 points. I know that sounds horrible, but I was happy that the defense, they made a play when they had to make a play. And that's all you can ask for at this point. It's just continue to show improvement. Young guys keep showing improvement, you know, and maybe they're getting better and they're starting to gel as a unit out there because, you know, they have a new defensive coordinator and maybe some of those, you know, the things that he's preaching, maybe they're starting to play faster, not think as much as what they have to do out on the field. They're just going out and executing. And you hope that's the case and you hope they can grow throughout the season and keep getting better. But, yeah, I was happy with them.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Overall, as we're talking about, like, coaching, I noticed a couple, like, UTSA fans. And, you know, we mentioned this before. Let's pat ourselves on the back by saying that they were trending downward and we were trending upward. We're not the same team as we were against Portland State. And I think, you know, like, Mike Canales has even echoed the same thing in his press conference. We're going to get to that in a second. We're going to recap LaTeX in a second and then talk about Mike Canales' thoughts. but we outcoached them, I thought. Meaning basic motivation. Like, motivation is a big thing for coaching. And I think that's where Mike Canales excels. He's a little weird for me with his third person references and his lock the gate things. But, he gets everybody ready to play. He is inspiring, and that's mostly what you want from a coach. You know, players got to play, and you want a guy to kind of inspire you to go play your hardest, or play harder than you maybe would on your own. And he did that. And you look at Larry Coker out there, and whatever magic that he had his first 5 years or whatever, he didn't have it that night. And where UTSA maybe looked better than North Texas the last two seasons, this is the first time in the matchup, obviously, where we played to the whistle every time. We out-hustled them. I think UTSA was out-coached. And that's maybe the first time you could say that about a North Texas opponent this season, where we out-coached them. You got any thoughts there?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. Canales is a great motivator. The writing maybe on the wall for a guy like Coker. You know, a lot of their fans want him out, and I don't know if they're able to, you know, pull that trigger or whatnot, but he's kind of, you know, trending to what Coach Mack was. You know, do they even respect him in their program? Do the players, you know, are they still buying into the message? The players in North Texas, they're buying into what Canales is saying, even though that they were defeated. And that says a lot about, you know, Mike Canales as a person, that, you know, the players are motivated. They went out there. They wanted to beat UTSA. They felt like they owed them something. It was a revenge game. It was that, you know, we need to win this game. You know, we deserve to win this game, and we're going to play hard. And UTSA, you know, maybe probably didn't respect us as much as they should have. And, you know, it was, you know, even their fans, you know, saying that, you know, I had the tweet earlier in the week saying, you know, it's going to be a matchup of evenly matched teams. And, you know, they were saying like, oh, this is false. And I was like, I don't know what you're in there, but you're not that good. I mean, yeah, you've played some tough teams. And you played them maybe close, but you didn't win. And, you know, I was like, yeah, you know, you guys still suck.
All right. So that's last week. And, I mean, we violated the 24-hour rule, but we didn't get a podcast Sunday like we wanted to. So let's use this next, you know, 10 minutes, I guess, to discuss the matchup coming up. La Tech is the one of the best teams in the conference. Not as good as West Kentucky, I don't think, but definitely up there. And I think Mike Canales said as much also. I feel like Mike Canales is just repeating everything I'm saying out here, man. I'm kidding. And, you know, they can stop the run, and they can run the ball. Here's the thing. They barely beat UTSA. And I don't know if they were taking them like lightly or something, but I mean, La Tech destroyed Middle Tennessee, and then they destroyed Rice. Those are their recent games, so they're really good. And I'm gonna let you take the lead on this. I know you've done a little bit more research than I have this week. So, what are your thoughts? What do we got to look out for?
They got caught probably looking ahead when they lost, or they beat UTSA only by 3. They're probably looking ahead to Mississippi State, you know, who was their next game. And they were kind of, you know, viewing that as, hey, that's our moment. But they're the best team in the western part of Conference USA. They lost to Kentucky early in the year, 41-38, but they've gotten better since then. And last year they had a guy like Cody Sokol at quarterback, you know, come in, really helped, you know, move that program forward, really difference made them at quarterback. Well, this year they're even better at quarterback because Driscoll, he doesn't have a ceiling like Sokol did. Sokol kind of, you know, topped out towards the end of the year. Driscoll just keeps getting better. So, you know, okay, now they have Driscoll, but they also have this guy, Kenneth Dixon, at running back, who we're all familiar with by now, and he's a great running back. So you when you're facing their offense, who do you take away? Do you take away Driscoll or do you take away Dixon? And it's going to be tough for our defense to take away anybody. So they're obviously going to focus on trying to take away Dixon. That's what everybody else has done. That's what they're going to try and do. But Driscoll, it's just going to be tough for us to defend against him because he's got plenty of weapons around him. He's got this little guy, Trent Taylor, who's like a 5'8 wide receiver. Dude's got 72 catches on the year. He's like a, you know, Danny Amendola, Julian Edelman type of wide receiver. 72 catches, 1,000 yards already. That's huge numbers. And then Carlos Henderson, Paul Turner. So they've got weapons on the outside. So, I mean, it's tough. Their offense is really tough to defend against.
Yeah, just some stats for Jeff Driscoll so far. 198 completions on 320 attempts, 2,700 yards, 19 touchdowns, and only 4 interceptions. QB rating of 150. So, yeah.
He's so really good. He's playing well. And then you get to the defensive side of the ball, and they had Manny Diaz last year as their defensive coordinator. Now he's at Mississippi State. And I know everybody kind of remembers that early Thursday night game where they blitzed the hell out of us. Came after Josh Green. And, you know, he's like the deer in the headlights type of look in that game. And they got all over us. And we played okay at times. But again, they, like we said earlier in the podcast, they play downhill. They play fast. They've got 62 tackles for a loss already on the year on defense. They're playing in the opponent's backfield is basically what we're saying. They got a guy, Vernon Butler, a 300-pound defensive lineman. He's got 6 tackles for losses. I think those are all sacks on the year. But he's going to play in the NFL. He's going to play in the NFL. Jalen Ferguson, a defensive lineman for them. He's 11.5 sacks. He leads them, or he's got 11.5 tackles for losses. He leads them in sacks. So their run defense is really good. Now, where you could take advantage of Louisiana Tech is in the secondary. Their pass defense is not as good as their run defense. They're giving up, you know, when they're facing just FBS competition, they're giving up 277 yards a game. That would rank them about 113. So you can see how this is setting up for North Texas. Louisiana Tech's going to do everything that they can to take away our run because they're not. Who would respect our passing game at this point? Nobody would. So the passes over the top are going to be there. Rice had opportunities to beat Louisiana Tech over the top. Couldn't get it done. Can DeMarcus Smith, can he grow as a passer? Can they give him enough time to beat, for the wide receivers to beat Louisiana Tech's corners down the field? That's where this game's probably going to come into. We'll probably hit 100 yards rushing just because we're going to run it so much, but I don't know if we're going to be able to hit 200 yards rushing. If we're hitting 200 yards rushing against Louisiana Tech, we have a chance to stay with them. You know, a 29.5 point favorite, Louisiana Tech. That's a ton of points.
Yeah, the good news, I feel like we can run against them. Maybe we're not going to hit 200 yards rushing. We're on a 3-game streak of that. But it's not only like the total yards, because I think Rice has more total yards. But like, what's really important is like yards per carry. Excuse me. You know, Jeffrey Wilson's averaging 6.4. Was it 6.4 coming into the UTSA game? And I think he ended up with 5.8, mostly thanks to a couple of late game dives into the middle of the line. We're trying to run the ball out. You know, so I think it was like 5.8 yards a carry, but it's essentially 6. We're gashing them. I think against UTSA we averaged 8.1. We can run the ball, and a lot of that is, like I said, chunk yardage that Jeffrey Wilson doesn't just get 4 or 5 yards, you know, and then gets tackled. That he starts hitting you for deep runs, you know, 38 yards here, 27 here. I mentioned last week that Wilson has the number of the top 20. Longest runs, the biggest plays were all Jeffrey Wilson plays, like passing and rushing. He's a big play kind of dude. It was kind of strange that he didn't score. He hasn't scored more touchdowns, but that's kind of more of a function of our offense. But did you see that run, the one that he had on the sweep right, that he should have got tackled at for like 3 yards, but he bounced off 2 dudes and pounded his way into the end zone? Like, that's what we're going to need to do is – have SB Nation's Bill Connolly calls them highlight yards. It's basically like 4 yards. The first 4 yards, he assigns those to the offensive line. Like saying the offensive line blocked so well, you can get 4 yards. Anybody can get that 4 yards. After that, it's you. What do you got? And so if you look at, you know, Jeffrey Wilson out here averaging, you know, 6 yards a carry, that extra two and a half yards per carry is all him. It's him making that cut. It's him breaking that tackle, you know? And I think with a team like Louisiana Tech, stacking a run, looking to stop them, those are the kinds of things that we're going to need. It's breaking a tackle where it should be a two-yard gain. Instead, it's a four. It should be almost a first down, like, you know, they stopped you short, but now he got the first down because he battled a little bit. Yeah. It will be interesting to see if we can basically bring them on a blitz, because if I'm Louisiana Tech, like you said, I'm going to bring out that same Manny Diaz game plan that they had for Josh Greer. Say, all right, let's see what North Texas has. We are going to put all the pressure on you and see if you can diagnose the defense and make a play. We're not going to let you beat us the way you want to beat us.
In that game last year, Josh Greer had guys open deep down the field. He just wasn't able to complete it. His accuracy was off. And we know that the question mark with DeMarcus right now is accuracy. And maybe it's timing and not working with the right wide receivers, but he's just not being able to hit the deep ball down the field. If he starts in the deep ball against Louisiana Tech, we could jump up and bite them in the ass. If you look at, you know, the teams that, it's kind of, you know, jumping a little bit off course, but the teams that have been able to semi-run or had a running quarterback against Louisiana Tech, Rice, they only had 101 yards on 33 carries. In Mississippi State with Dak Prescott, they only had 93 yards rushing. Louisiana Lafayette, 149. They were averaging like 5.5 yards per carry. And then Kansas State, 165 with 3.67 yards per carry. So it is possible, I think, for us to run, like you said, on them. But, yeah, that 200 yards, boy, that'll be tough.
Yeah, and a lot of that is like, I think Rice had net 101 rush yards. I wonder how much that was sacked. I think, well, they got sacked three times for 16 yards. So that kind of contributed to it. And they were down. I mean, here's the thing, is that we've been able to run on everybody. You know, Iowa
except
ran on them.
State.
Yeah, again, well, I'm tossing that one out. We ran on, even want to just look last three games, Western Kentucky, they're decent run defense, ran against them. Marshall, one of the best, I mean, the best of the three that we played, ran on them, ran all over them, really. And then UTSA, who was like fourth, they're okay. You know, like they kind of hyped themselves up, meaning like their fans are like, well, we're really good. You're not going to be able to run. But then again, they didn't even know who Jeffrey Wilson was. So
against FBS competition, 191 yards per game, that would rank us 36th. 5.5 yards per carry, that would rank us 29th. That's just against FBS competition.
Yeah, and I'd go ahead and say that we'd be running more if we were ahead. Like a lot of these games, we're losing, and so we're trying to, you know, make plays with the passing game, and so we maybe force things. You know, again, I don't like to play what if. The thing is that we can run the ball, you know. Maybe still not to the point where we can say we're going to run it three straight times and get first downs every time. But we can run it where we can say we can run the ball and get third and short. Now, can our quarterback do what he needs to do to get that first down, to get the touchdown? And I want to segue a little bit into some DeMarcus Smith talk before we go into what Mike Kanellis said. And it kind of all ties in together. I mean, he made a lot of things. He said a lot of things right after the game on his Monday press conference, and then today, the Louisiana Tech, like, preview press conference. So, first of all, DeMarcus Smith, yes, he needs to improve completing his passes. That said, he hasn't had a whole lot of time to practice this stuff. He hasn't had a whole lot of reps with these guys, but apparently, according to Kanellis, and you just kind of see this, he's not the greatest at diagnosing the play. I did think it was interesting that going into this game, you know, because he had his two losses in his basically family, that Kanellis was considering starting Josh Greer and not Andrew McNulty. I thought that was very interesting and telling. We'll get to that in a second. But DeMarcus Smith he's not been able to read the defense prior to the snap. He's pretty okay after, as long as it's pretty simple. But he's missing guys. I think they highlighted on the broadcast he looked indecisive. There was one where Thaddeus Thompson was wide open on a spacing play, and he threw it towards his inside shoulder. Thaddeus was going outside, and he was pretty upset about it. He and DeMarcus Smith are totally not on the same page. Like, every time they try to have a passing play, it's way off. The only guy that he can complete it to is probably Carlos Harris, and then to a lesser extent, Turner Smiley. Those guys, he can complete passes to them all day, pretty much. Will we see some improvement against Louisiana Tech? Do you think so? Like, do you have any? I mean, what is your prediction about that?
I think he'll hit one deep ball. I think he'll get lucky. Well, not get lucky. I think he'll hit one deep ball. I think the amount of pressure that they're going to throw at him is going to be like a Marshall. They're going to come after him all day long, all night long, and it's going to be tough for us to see, you know, the improvement. But, you know, who knows? This, you know, he gets a full week of practice. Things have calmed down. We won a game. So there might be improvement. I just find it hard to believe that we're going to see it in this game against this type of defense. This is a tough type of defense to see the improvement that we're hoping to.
All right. Let's quickly go to this Mike Kanellis stuff. First off, I'm just going to ask you straight out. Are you considering him? Like, would you consider him for the head coach, considering his support? I wrote up a post on this, and it turns out Underdog Dynasty did too. They did really like 5 hours after I did. But anyway, like, I basically said, you know, like, I'm not on the keep Mike Kanellis bandwagon. He's been part of the reason why we are in this position. And that's mostly why I think we're ready for a new one. I think we can get another coach. I think we're a little bit too, we have like a complex. We feel like anybody that likes us, we over embrace that. I mean, we're a good job to have. Anyway, he's passionate. He's showed some things offensively. I mean, like that fumble Ruski thing. He's won here. This was his first win. It was important because it was his first win. It was DeMarcus Smith's first win. It was our first win against a rival. It was our first home win of the season. A lot of first conference win. That was a big win. And he's won, I think, the first time, his first go-round, he won two games when Todd Dodge won only one up to that point. This season, in five tries, McCarney won zero. And now in, what is it, he's 1-2 so far, Mike Kanellis. And he has player support. I think a bunch of former players, a lot of former players have tweeted me and other people and, you know, through DMs and this, that, and the other have said, you know, basically, I've been in locker rooms. I've been in his locker room. I know what we need. This guy's the guy. Marcus Streis said, this guy's the guy. What do you think?
No, he's not the guy. And I mean, I'm just going to put it simple. He's not the guy. We need something different. It's not, you know, an indictment saying that he's a bad coach or whatever, but he's not what this program needs now. We need bigger than Mike Kanellis. And I know that sounds a little greedy, but maybe it was right for him to be the head coach back in the day, you know, when they first, that would have been the right time, but now it's not the right time. I mean, when you're the interim head coach, you know, you're not really, you have nothing to lose. So you can coach any way you want to coach, and nobody's going to view it like any worse than Dan McCarney. You know, anything you do is going to be better and is going to be different and it's going to inject some life. So, I mean, he's kind of coaching with house money each time. He's a great master motivator. You know, tons of players love him. I'm just wondering, if everything that we've heard about him is saying that, you know, he was hands tied behind his back, you know, he didn't get to pick certain quarterbacks, why would you stay? I mean, why did, if you're that coach, and I think he's a pretty good coach, and I think he could have got jobs other places, why didn't he leave? I don't
that's
get
true. That's, if, that's a
if everything's going against you, why are you staying? It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, he reminds me a lot. I don't know if a lot of you watch any soccer where, you know, they'll replace a manager like with right when the team's in a relegation battle. Basically, if they lose any more games, they're going to get sent down to the lower division. And they hire a new guy, and he does a turnaround job. They're like, wow, thanks, guy. He saved us. We're saved in the Premier League. And then new season comes around, and this guy's like, they're not playing anywhere near the way they were playing before. And so then they fire him, and then they hire another turnaround specialist. I wonder if a little bit – Mike Canales has a little bit of that, you know. He's a little bit of a turnaround, you know, relegation battle specialist. I don't want to spend too much time on whether or not we should keep Mike Canales. I know you have some news about the coaching search, so I'll let you go with that. What's up?
Well, the first one we tweeted it out, it was yesterday. They had set the salary. We're going to pay our next big man between $900,000 and $1.5 million. That's a jump. That would put us in the tops. You know, it's probably very highly likely that we're going to pay our next head coach. He will be the top head coach in Conference USA pay wise. I don't know about staff, but you know, he's going to get some serious money. The Kendall Browse, it jumped out there. Feldman reported it, and they tried hard. I mean, they won. That was a guy that they really wanted. They tried multiple times to get him to be interested. And you know, what we're hearing is that, you know, we said it before that the interest wasn't there, and we're coming back around, and we're still going to say that he's not really interested, you know, kind of, you know, thanks, but no thanks type of deal. Feldman reported Withers from James Madison. He did call. He is interested. Mike Norvell, the offensive coordinator for Arizona State, and I was doing some research on him, you know, when his name kind of popped up. And a lot of Arizona State fans want him out anyways, but I don't get it. I mean, he seems to do okay there, but I thought that was kind of interesting. He really wants the job. And he's only a year older than Bryles, I believe. So he looks older, though, because he kind of has the gray hair. He looks like he's more, you know, polished and looks like he'd be more organized, you know, ready to take over a team. Anyways, he's really interested. And finally, the last thing that we heard about yesterday was that the people met with Lincoln Riley. He contacted us about the job. He reached out to us first, and the interest is mutual between them. They met with him. They were very impressed with him. And he's probably, right now, he's at the top of the pecking order. Now, I think the interesting thing with a guy like Lincoln Riley and all these guys that are drawing our interest, which are good names, they're good names, and you hope that we, you know, I would take Mike Norvell. I would take Lincoln Riley in a heartbeat because we know we could do a lot worse than them, is let's talk about if Fuente gets hired somewhere else, if Houston gets Herman gets hired somewhere else. They're paying those guys $1.4 million right now at their jobs. So we're probably going to be competing with a Memphis or a Houston for a head coach. Because Houston, their pool of candidates would include like a Lincoln Riley. So is our job better or worse than a Houston? I think it comes down to timing, too. I think it's a big part because if we tell Lincoln Riley that, hey, we're going to give you $1.4 million, you know, say yes at the beginning of December, he can go build a staff. And I think it's critical for a young head coach to get a quality staff in. So yeah, if he's able to get a staff in early, as opposed to maybe that Houston job doesn't open up until mid-December, the end of December, you know, and maybe a little bit of a rush for him. Yes, he'll have, you know, better team, you know, around him. But still, I think, you know, we've got some things working in our court. You know, we're paying a ton of money. We got resources. We got a nice stadium. We're in a decent conference. There's good guys that are interested. The question is, can we nail somebody down? Can we sell ourselves? You know, because we have that stipulation of the culture, you know, it's bad. It's a losing culture at North Texas. we need to sell North Texas. The people that, you know, RV, and I know that sounds like, oh my God, this is the guy that's got to sell us. But, you know, I think the president comes in here. I think he's the key to everything. I think, you know, and we get into, you had this on the agenda, him being involved, and what did that mean? I think this is that part where, can he sell a guy like Lincoln Riley, you know, come to North Texas? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to slightly disagree with you there a little bit. Is that I think that all these coaches are selling themselves because we are the scarce resource. There's a lot of guys out there. There's a lot of coaches. And we are one of 128 coaches, like Dan McCarney liked to say. FBS quality. We're a good program. A lot of people are interested in this. And I think it's mostly the fans that have that kind of, like, stigma about ourselves. We have a complex about ourselves. A couple things. If I'm Lincoln Riley and I look at, like, Houston, that seems like the better job. Well, Houston has a winning tradition. They have this. They have that. They're a good team right now. I could go over there and continue that. But you're a little bit – you're on a shorter leash there. And, you know, you're basically, you know, you're being compared immediately to successful guys previously. Your Art Briles, your, you know, Kevin Sumlin, and now Tom Herman. So – you come to North Texas, you have a little bit more breathing room, you know, and you can make this yours. I don't know if that plays a part in it all, but I would certainly consider that. Like, hey, I can go to North Texas and put my stamp on it. The last guy to really have a name there, like a coach that's going to, you know, that's associated with North Texas is, you know, is a guy from 1975, basically, right? Hayden Fry. I mean, there's a couple other guys that we know, but when you say North Texas football, the last guy that had us ranked was Hayden Fry. So you come in here and put your name on it, right? So I wonder if that maybe plays a part. If I'm, you know, like you said, if I'm Smastrisk, if I'm Villarreal or Villarreal, I'm going to say that. Hey, this could be, you know, you can put your name on this, you know? Like, you can, people be singing your praises over here. This could be your thing. Don't go, you know, be in Briles' shadow, basically. You know, you're going over there to Houston and trying to continue what they did. Sure, that's good and that's great and it'd be a little bit easier, but you can go to come to North Texas and make it your own thing. You can put a stamp on it. You can be the Mike Leach in Texas Tech, right?
Right. I think coaches, they all have that ego.
Yeah,
you know, they can win anywhere. They believe that, you know, my system, it wins, and I can win anywhere if you believe in, you know, kind of what I have to say. So,
yeah,
you know, I think, yes, the Houston job may seem better, you know, but again, I just come back to the timing, the quality of staff, you know, you having the time to go through at the beginning of December, put everything together, even if he wants to do that, because, I mean, maybe OU works their way into, you know, a bigger bowl game and he wants to coordinate that. Who knows? But I think it was mentioned before that he reached out to us in the past about our offensive coordinator position before Mike Canales or, you know, I think I saw that mentioned somewhere. So I don't know. So obviously he has the history. Yeah. He's had interest. He knows about our program. He's coached in Conference USA at East Carolina. So he's recruited kids to a smaller school for the, you know, most part. And now he's doing good things at Oklahoma. So, you know, and the guys that cover Oklahoma, they're going to say that, you know, Riley's going to hold out for a bigger job. Of course, everybody's going to say that to us. You know, they're going to say that about Fritz. They're going to say that about Briles. But if this guy reached out and, you know, he showed the interest to us, I mean, that speaks volumes to me, you know. And again, it's going to come down to good schools for good coaches. Good people are going to be interested. There's also going to be people that, you know, that we want that aren't interested. But yeah, it's going to come down to, can we, you know, nail somebody down? Can we have to still sell ourselves. I still believe that, you know.
Yeah.
We have to be able to sell ourselves saying that, look, you can come to North Texas. You can build something great. and you can progress your career. I don't see any problem with saying that, you know, you can use our job as a stepping stone. Arkansas State does it, you know, with all their coaches that go through, and they keep, you know, building. I think that would be a great model to follow. So I have no problem with saying Lincoln Riley, come here, we're going to give you 1.4, we're going to get, you know, give you time to build your coaching staff, you do it your way, and so be it. If you win here and you take a great job, you know, good luck to you, sir, and thank you for, you know, turning us into a winning program.
I agree. We're running a little bit short on time, and I do want to get to Twitter questions. So I'm just going to kind of run through some notes about the Canales press conference that I thought were interesting. One, he had said he told the staff, I told the team that when we win, we're going to celebrate like the Super Bowl. He's like, winning's fun. Let's do it again. Let's do it again. He said Doc Holliday, Marshall's coach, had said that you guys, meaning North Texas, are different than what we saw on film. So, again, more evidence to what we were saying earlier, that we've basically been a different team since we parted ways with Dan McCartney. Canales agrees with you about the blitzes. Dave, they're heavy. He said we didn't hit the open ones, and they're going to be there. We've seen that. And we got to do a better job this season. So, again, he says it. We said, watch that. It's going to be a key to the game. Their pressure on our quarterback, and will we be able to alleviate that pressure by hitting some big ones on them? He pointed out that DeMarcus Smith has to spread the ball out to other guys. He's obviously comfortable with one or two, but he needs to do a better job of seeing how they're like rolling coverage here and there and focus on some other guys. So that's another key to watch. I thought it was funny how he was kind of hyping himself. Like this is kind of like, I think Vito kind of led him into this. Like, hey, don't you think you did a good job? Well, and he's like, yeah, you know, like things like putting on the helmet. Like they respond to that. I just thought it was funny. I know he's just saying this out of the way he is. I just get a kick out of him saying stuff like that. Apparently, whoever tweeted at him and said, hey, if you were as good at calling plays as you were at Googling motivational speeches, you know, maybe we'd be winning the game. He said he framed that, put on in his garage to motivate himself. He said that was a good one. So, hey, good job, guy. all right, so let's get to Twitter questions. We'll end this last one. We'll spend the last, 5-10 minutes on this. I'm going to go in reverse order. So Scott Campbell has two. He has one and a follow-up question. One. How does UNT find $1.5 million for a football coach? And is it the 17, the Illuminati, the UNT Illuminati, the big-time donors? And can you picture a coach that can turn this program around in 1 or 2 years? The first one, yeah, it's basically donors. We've gotten a lot more money from Conference USA and a lot of other things, but a lot of this is donors. Most of college football is big donors. Hell, politics is run by donors too, right? But the most interesting part is the 1 or 2 years. Yes, I think we can win. We have the guys that can win 6 games and get to a bowl game. We get to a bowl game, all of a sudden we're, you know, all the stories written like, look at this guy came in here, won a bowl game after North Texas finished, you know, 1 and whatever or 2 and whatever last season. Definitely after 2 years. We have the talent. We got young enough talent that you can win with these guys. You can win a bowl game. Conference USA is not some juggernaut league where you can't have a nice little turnaround. Your thoughts on that quickly?
I think it's the donors as well as the university itself willing to step up and make, you know, be serious about the coaching hire, you know, bump up the pay. I think the donors helped out with the buyout of Dan McCartney. Yeah. I think that's one area where you could say that the university itself didn't pay for it. I'm pretty sure that maybe not the 17, but probably the three big guys, they're probably the guys that said, this needs to be done. Here's the buyout money. Let's move on. So I think it's a little bit of both there. Yes, we can win in 1 to 2 years. There should be no issue there. I think the biggest thing that the next coach has to do is can he find a quarterback besides DeMarcus Smith, and can he build DeMarcus Smith, you know, from the ground up? Can he you know, Image, you know, DeMarcus Smith, kind of like what, you know, Cumbie did with Trevon Boykin. Can we see that similar growth with DeMarcus Smith? Because if somebody's able to come in and do that, you know, if a Lincoln Riley or maybe a Cumbie gets interested and they come in and they fix him and they make him into a good Conference USA quarterback, then we can win next year. We can go to a bowl game. We can challenge Conference USA West. We can be a title contender. There's talent here.
DeMarcus Smith is almost very nearly changing games by himself right now, and that's completing
50% just by running the ball.
Yeah. And here's the other thing: maybe we go La Tech route and we get, you know, a JUCO transfer guy that maybe does the job. Yeah, you can definitely win 2 years. I think at this level, you should be expected to compete for a conference championship every 4 years. That means you're in a young class. You know, they get to their fourth year, they compete. You have maybe 1 year where you're kind of losing 3 to 5 wins, you know, and then you throw in like a bad luck year. But every 2 years, you should be in a bowl game, I think, at this level, if you're a successful coach. All right, this one, that was from UNT Campbell. Thanks, UNT Campbell and Scott Campbell. Billy Sierra, friend of the show and the site, says silly on Twitter, says, what are the chances the staff wants to see Dillman at QB in the spring, given Means and Chumley are the only scholarship underclassmen quarterbacks? I'll leave that one for you.
I think that's a really good question, because I know a lot of fans out there, I know Sierra and myself, you know, argued that Dillman should have gotten a shot at quarterback, that he was arguably the most talented quarterback that we have on the roster, and he didn't get that shot. Now, Arizona State offered him when he was out in California. So I think that's interesting. What if Mike Norvell gets the job? Did he really recruit him as a tight end, or did he recruit him as a quarterback? Because if he recruited him as a quarterback and Norvell gets the job, you can bet damn sure that Dillman is going to be a quarterback. You know, he's going to put him back there and he'll mold him as his guy. Yeah. Other people, I'm not quite sure. You know, if a guy like Lincoln Riley gets him running that air raid type of offense, does Dillman really, does he fit that? Does DeMarcus Smith fit the air raid, you know, with the cannon arm? You know, you think of air raid not really stretching the ball down the field. So,
well, I'll disagree with you there. Mike Leach, that is a big component of the air raid, is throwing it down. There's a lot of dink and dunk, but it kind of depends on the quarterback. He gives a lot of freedom to the quarterback. Some guys are dink and dunk, and that's Cliff Kingsbury. A lot of people associate that. That was their first real thing on it. But you got a guy like B.J. Simmons. He was chucking the ball down the field. That's how he threw for 5,800 yards and 60 touchdowns, whatever. But that's an aside. I love the air raid. Sorry, I got to defend it at any time. Also, look at the kid at Texas Tech right now, this Mahomes guy. He has an arm. He's a little wonky. He likes to run around, so maybe. There's my aside. Sorry, I interrupted.
No worries. So I think it depends on the coach. I think they're going to look at what we have, evaluate it, and Dillman may be too big to be a quarterback at this point. Now, he's probably put on some weight, and they might still view him, you know, as a tight end. I think it'll be interesting to see who the coach is. If it's a quarterback coach, it's a quarterback heavy coach, he may move Dillman to back to the quarterback position.
I just want to go ahead and say size doesn't matter at the quarterback position. Everybody remembers that Kentucky had that big kid out there, right? He had his gut Jared hanging
Lorenzo.
Out. Yeah, he's chucking.
Yeah,
he's chucking,
so somebody had a Halloween costume as him. That was pretty funny. So you know what? If Norvell gets the job and he comes in and doesn't move Dillman to quarterback, then we all know that he wasn't meant to be a quarterback.
Yeah, that would be like the final nail. Yeah. All right. The real JD, the real underscore JD, asks, who would you rather see lead the Mean Green? Mike Norvell, Lincoln Riley? Just one or the other. Just say it.
Riley, because of the major Texas ties.
All right. Okay. So far, everybody on his little Twitter poll has said Lincoln Riley. Aldo Avina on Twitter says, I feel we can surprise offensively in this game. Again, talking about the La Tech game. Will DeMarcus have a big game in the air and on the ground? We kind of talked about this, but I guess we'll just answer it outright. Will he have a big game in the air and on the ground in this here Louisiana Tech game? I say he'll have a big game. He'll have a solid game rushing, won't have the greatest game passing.
I think he throws for more yards than he runs.
That's a solid thing. I think we're about done. We're usable all the time. I gotta go. People are pressuring me and stuff. Thanks everybody for listening. As always, we appreciate it. You can get us on Twitter.
Before you go.
What?
Before you go, give the prediction on the game. Do we win? Do we cover points? Just throw that out there.
I think we're going to lose this game. I think that's I can't see us beating Louisiana Tech. They're a really good team, but we definitely cover.
Yeah, I agree. I think we lose, but we cover.
Yeah. It's a nice conservative prediction. Hey, thanks again for listening. We had 4 people up right now. I know different people dropped in and out throughout the show. We really appreciate it. Please get in touch with us on all the ways that are available, the podcast voicemail that we mentioned. We threw that out there. Twitter, email. There's that forum that I had you guys test out. You can use that. And meanwhile, leave comments in the comment section. All the ways that you can get a hold of us, please use any and all of those. Because we do appreciate it. We like hearing feedback about how we're doing. And we like talking UNT football. So,
mm-hmm.
There you go. Yeah. And I mentioned this before, I thought. But soccer won. They won their first game against West Kentucky, 1-0. It was kind of close there. It was closer than it should have been. Rice lost to Middle Tennessee. And so on Friday, was it 4? Did I say 4:30 or 2:30? Friday in the afternoon. You can check it on the conference website. Take on Middle Tennessee in the semifinal. So good luck to the UNT soccer team. Fully expected they're going to go to the championship game and then even win that and go on to the NCAA tournament. So good luck to them. Anything else? Any parting thoughts?
If you're up in North Texas, we got a chance for some severe weather tomorrow. So stay safe out there.
All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. We are done.